Welcome to The Mortgage Voice with Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. Each week on this program, Jeff and his guests share their expertise, personal anecdotes, and the latest industry news to keep you in the loop. Now, to provide you with insight and help you navigate the consistently changing world of real estate lending, here is your host for The Mortgage Voice, Jeff Barton.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. Thanks very much for tuning into the show, for listening to us each and every week as we bring to you the news to use and things that'll help you make your decisions this year on whether you're going to buy that house, sell that house, whether you need a mortgage, refi, or purchase. All of these things, that's what the show is about, and we try to bring you that information on a weekly basis. KCAA is our radio station affiliate out there in the Inland Empire. I want to say hi to all those people over there, Mark and Fred and everybody else who brings our show to you. We do produce it out here in our, where are we today? Anyway.
We're in Santa Paula, California.
Thank you very much. Santa Paula, California. Well, because we've moved around quite a bit over the last 5 or 6 years, I kind of get lost. I know it's in Ventura County. I know that much. Anyway, we are coming to you from there, and we are not waterlogged. We're dry, and we're doing it fine. We did have some issues earlier in the week, but we seem to be fine. Again, coming to you from where we are to where you are, driving around Saturday and Sunday, whether you're going to church, whether you're coming back from the hardware store, whether you're doing some shopping, listening to us, we can help you. And one of the reasons that we can help you is because there's no other show out there, especially on this station, that is going to bring you the news about mortgages, mortgage interest rates, what's happening in the world that you have to be concerned about because it's going to affect your mortgage interest rate or the availability of property or some of the psychological aspects of buying and selling anything at any market. We try to take advantage of our knowledge, bringing it to you, as I say, on a weekly and a daily. If you want to see the show, we do, let's see, what it's not film, we record this. That's what we do. We record this for posterity and other things on YouTube. Jeff Barton, The Mortgage Voice, is our YouTube channel. Go there, see this show, see a lot of different shows. Many people binge watch the show, if you can believe that. I have many people who have joined the group. And if you do go to YouTube or any of these things, whether it's my website at themortgagevoice.com, whether it's any number of podcasts, whether it's YouTube, just say, I like it, and join. The reason is that you get updates and alerts as to what is happening, when it's happening, when new shows drop, and the like. Again, I'm Jeff Barton, and this is The Mortgage Voice. Let's get right to it. 30-year fixed rate today, 6.95%. Why are the rates going up? We'll get to that. The 15-year is at 6.30. FHA is at 6.19. Jumbo is at 7.3%. The 5-1 ARM is at 6.55%. The 2-year bond is at 4.427, and the 10-year is at 4.1. That's a 30-point spread, i.e. 30 basis points spread between the 2 and the 10. The narrowing continues, although it's a little bit stalled out. There are many reasons for that, I guess. It's not one of those technical shows where we're going to get into the aspects of why things happen the way they happen with the 10-year and the 2-year. Suffice it to say that we were a point off or 100 basis points difference a year ago, and now we're down to 30 basis points different. It really hasn't made much of a difference because the precursor to all of our future prognostications about whether there's going to be a recession has now all been booted to the curb. We have that inevitable soft landing that we had talked about for a long, long time, that many economists said wasn't going to happen, that a great deal of economists have then since, even Larry Kudlow of ex-Fox fame and a on the last President's Council on Economic Affairs, has done a mea culpa saying, hey, I was wrong. You know what? The recession didn't come. We do have the soft landing. We do have unemployment, which is low, employment, which is high, and the inflation rate come down pretty rapidly. And as it still comes down, we've seen a revision of the last month's, last quarter's inflation, and it's actually lower than, it has come down faster and is lower than they had originally thought. So that's interesting, because when we were talking last week about revisions to economic data, it was the one bastion where we could go to, because everything is subject to revisions. Everything is subject to a different opinion by somebody else. We always go to the hard numbers of what things are. And of course, last week I was talking about an article I had read, which talked about different things within economic, especially unemployment, the Jolts report and such, about how those revisions really make things almost useless in the first reporting. So this particular revision on inflation is bolstering the claim that inflation not only is on its way down, but is actually a little bit faster than what had originally been reported. Again, thank you very much for listening to the show. So let's talk a little bit about that 30-year 6.95%. So you can, yes, you can probably get, if you have excellent credit and you have good documentation on a full doc loan, you could probably get a little bit better than that. But why are rates going back up? We had come from a little over 8% about 3 or 4 months ago. We had dipped down to almost 6.5%. A little bit lower, again, on excellent credit and excellent borrower. But now we've gone back up. And one of the reasons that we go back up and down all the time, and we look to that 10-year 4.1. Now, one of the things that's interesting is that when we were at, let's say, 7%, the last time we were at 7%, the 10-year was much higher than this. So when we're looking to the 10-year to be the bellwether or the thing that we look to say, okay, this is the 10-year, this is the rate. Doesn't really work like that. There are so many things that go into the interest rates. We talk the 10-year because the coupon on the 10-year is a certain yield. That yield must be matched by mortgage-backed securities, whatever the rates are, in order to compete with dollars out there in the marketplace. Okay, yeah, sounds very, very intense, right? Well, look at it like this. If you're going to buy something and it's going to stay a value, or you're going to buy something and it's going to lose value, what are you going to do? Probably going to buy the thing that keeps its value or has the ability to have that value go up. And that's where we are versus the 10 versus mortgage-backed securities. The 10-year bond is debt sold by the U.S. government, and that particular debt will yield you X amount of dollars. You usually get a discount, too, when you buy long-term debt from the U.S., whether it's 2 or 10-year. If you are buying mortgage-backed securities, or in that 10-year versus mortgage-backed securities, the mortgage-backed securities has to match that particular yield, has to match what you're getting from buying the 10-year, or that you're not going to be able to compete. So therefore, it doesn't matter what the 10-year is up and down, as long as it's competing with what's happening in the mortgage-backed securities. So the 10-year is yielding X. As I just said, it's 4.1%. So anything in the mortgage-backed security realm that's being sold also has to at least meet or come close or beat that yield of 4.1%, which is why the 7% mortgage interest rate is what it is, because the yields on the 10-year went up. So therefore, you have to match that. I know that's a long about, a kind of a confusing way to look at it, but like I said, if you're buying something and you know it's going to lose value, you're probably going to buy something else that keeps value or value goes up. And that's kind of what you have to look at when you're looking at the 10 versus mortgage-backed securities. Okay, the mortgage rates again, 7% on strong economy. So we've been looking for the Fed to tell us, okay, we're going to lower interest rates. And what that does for many, many things in the marketplace, it makes borrowing cheaper. Borrowing cheaper is a good thing for many reasons. One, it bolsters the economy. It makes people go back to work. It makes people borrow money, invest in their businesses. It also helps on long-term debt, not long-term, but short-term debt, like credit cards, automobile loans, things that you probably have noticed have gone up quite a bit since you've been, since the recession, and obviously since if you're looking to those things to maintain your lifestyle, continue your borrowing, continue your purchasing, which has really continued unabated since the recession has really ended. The economy is very resilient, but what we see is credit card debt is going through the roof, and that's not a good thing. So if we have the Fed drop their rates, that will make your credit card payments less. It's the difference between 12% and 22% on credit card debt on outstanding rotating revolving credit card debt. And those things are cheaper. It's better for you. It's better for the economy. And so that's what we're looking for. But with the economy so strong, we're not going to get it probably until June. So That is what it is. Anyway, we'll be back. My name is Jeff Barton. This is The Mortgage Voice. Appreciate you listening in. And as I said, we'll be right back.
You're listening to The Mortgage Voice with Jeff Barton. We'll be right back with more in just a moment. For questions or comments, send emails to info@malibufunding.net. Now, back to The Mortgage Voice with your host, Jeff Barton.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. Thanks very much for tuning into the show, for listening to us every week on a weekly basis from the Inland Empire. KCAA is our radio station out there, and we really thank those people for helping us get to you. We're also on a number of different podcasts. Daryl, do we have a list of those?
I sure do, Jeff. It's Apple Music, Play, Stitcher, Spreaker.
Streaker.
We're new on Streaker. Radio.com, podclips.io, and The Mortgage Voice, obviously, which you spoke of.
Excellent. Okay, thank you very much. So podclips.io, if you want to centralize all your podcasting needs, go there. It's great. It's good. It's got several different varieties of podcasts that you can listen to, some about finance, some about health, some about lifestyle, some about dispute resolution on contracts, especially in real estate and mortgages. Those two guys, I think Mike is one of the guys' names. Great.
Yeah, Mike and Ira, I think.
Okay, excellent. So if you have any need for information about those, go to podclips.io, centralize all your podcasting needs, and that's a good place to go. Okay, I am Jeff Barton. This is The Mortgage Voice, talking about debt, talking about how debt affects not only you, but other things in the economy, how debt is bought and sold, and why certain things are what they are, like why is the 7% 7% when we thought we were headed towards a more stable mid-range of between 5.5% to 6.5%. It looks like we might be heading north of 7%. So we talked about that a little bit in a different segment, but I wanted to talk some about debt, what is debt, and what is it all about, Alfie, in terms of, you know, the debt and how it affects your particular, you know, position in life. As I said, credit card debt is up. It's huge. It's, I think, $1.5 trillion worth of credit card debt, which is above the average before COVID. 70% of household debt is the mortgage, however, and this is one of the interesting things. So if the mortgage rates go up and your particular payment that you're going to have to make on your purchase goes up, that means that your disposable income is less and less and less. So when they talk about the debt-to-income ratio or the back-end mortgage information, mortgage ratio, this is what they're talking about. How much does your mortgage cost you on a monthly basis when it comes to what your income is? 70% of all household debt is mortgages. So that tells you right away that housing or what are they calling it, the unhoused or housed crisis as opposed to the homeless crisis. It's really about that. And when we talk inflation, one of the things about inflation that they talk about, there's two types of inflation. There's the normal consumer inflation, and then there's the core consumer inflation. The core consumer inflation takes out housing and takes out food costs, and everything else is what the core consumer inflation is. Just to give you an idea of the difference in the numbers, difference of the reports, they've all been positive, by the way, but in terms of debt itself, let's continue that particular discussion. Student loan debt, $1.5 trillion, is 9.1% of the overall debt. So between the student debt and the household debt, if you're lucky enough to get into a house, that's 80% of what you make, right? So if you're making $100,000 minus taxes, well, you're not making anything. You don't have anything to eat. You can't make a car payment. That's why most people in this demographic, the new demographic coming up, the millennials are already old enough to have already purchased houses, even though they're late to the market. But millennials, Gen X, Gen Z, these people are finding it difficult to find housing. How are we dealing with it? What are we doing it? Tried to bring on a housing expert today to talk a little about that. Not only what is the federal government, what's the state government, county government, what are we doing in our local neighborhoods in order to push that? Obviously, in California, we have the ADUs, the additional dwelling unit, and there are many communities which don't like the additional dwelling unit, but that is only a partial way by which to exacerbate some of the housing crisis. You got to build more houses. I mean, that's simply the way it is. The only way to do that is to cut through red tape, is to be able to make it more streamlined, make it more effective, make it more cost effective. And there we get into prices, why things are cost what they are. Look, we just went through why interest rates went up, why they cost what they cost. The question of all of this is, Most of the money in the mortgage interest rate in the mortgage world comes from the federal government, in filtered down through the member banks, filtered down to mortgage people, whether they're brokers, whether they're lenders. But it is borrowed money. It is not something whereby we take deposits. What's Bailey's last name? What's his first name?
F. Lee?
No. You know, George Bailey, right?
Oh, George Bailey. Oh, you're talking about, His
Wonderful Life.
Life,
right. Yeah. So anybody sees that, anybody who is older than, dirt like I am, or younger than, whatever, may not know what George Bailey is. George Bailey was the guy that owned Bailey Savings and Loan. And the old adage was, okay, I'll take the money from the neighborhood, and we'll give a respectable interest rate to keep their money in our savings and loan, but we'll lend that money out to the people in the neighborhood, so therefore people in the neighborhood are investing in the people in the neighborhood by putting money into this bank, and then they lend it out to other people. Well, that doesn't happen anymore. What happens is the federal government lends out 10-1 to member banks in terms of deposits versus money they'll lend to you. 10-1, think about that. You have $1 billion, they'll lend you $10 billion. Okay, so that money is then churned through the mortgage industry, whether it's through other member banks, whether it's through regional banks, whether it's through the big powerhouse mortgage brokerages, or whether it's filtered down into the little guys, and there's plenty of us. There's 9,000 different lenders out there who will help you with your mortgage in the different states. Here in California, there's certainly that many, if not more, and you can always go to your credit union and different ways, that savings and loan, to get your own particular mortgages. So given that is what it is, the mortgage banking industry only survives if that money gets churned. And that money needs to get churned. And what happens is, once you lend it out, the mortgage comes back, and then it is sold to Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, Ginnie Mae. That is the standard way by which we circle through money. That's why when we say the GSEs, what we're talking about is Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. These huge entities have trillions of dollars of mortgages on their books, and they take the monthly payments by way that, that agreement works, that they purchase the loans. Then they package those particular payments off, whether it's a 3% mortgage or a 7% mortgage, put them together, come up with bonds, sell those bonds out, and that's how we replenish the mortgage money in the pool of money that gets lent out. So between the federal government and the GSEs, yes, there's a lot of debt being bought and sold around. So for you, okay, we talked about the 70% of household debt is the mortgage loan. The 9% of it is to those people who have student debt. Auto loans generate another 9.2%. Credit card debt, as I just said, top $1.5 trillion is 6.5%, which is pretty good. Mortgage payments as a percentage of disposable income, amortized lowest in 40 years. So what that means is, okay, we're taking your mortgage payment, but because many people bought or refied into 3%, 4%, 5% or less mortgages, that payment really reduced that ratio between the reduction and the actual money borrowed is the lowest it's been in 40 years, which is why most people don't want to move out of their particular house, because their payments are so low, which means that this 70% of household debt being mortgages is after we've already gone through that refi boom, and everybody's now into very low mortgages. So you can imagine what it was prior to. Now, granted, people do tend to scale down their mortgage interest and their mortgage interest payments when they refi. And many people refied over the years, whether they went from a 7 to a 6 to a 5 to a 4 to a 3. People will refi as long as it's advantageous to do so, and that's the one of the tests when you do refi, to make sure that you are not being taken. It's just very interesting in terms of how debt works, what debt is, how it affects you in your own particular decision-making process. Now that mortgage interest rates are 7%, that 70% number is probably a little bit higher for those people who are currently borrowing. I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. Thanks for tuning in to the show, and we will be right back.
You're listening to The Mortgage Voice with Jeff Barton. We'll be right back with more in just a moment. For more information on today's topic, email Jeff Barton at info@malibufunding.net. Now, back to The Mortgage Voice with your host, Jeff Barton.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. Thanks very much for tuning into the show, listening to us each and every week. as we try to bring to you some help, in decision making when you're buying and selling real estate, whether it's, you know, a purchase or a refi. There's all kinds of questions. You know, why is the 7% 7%? Why isn't it 6.5% like it was 2 weeks ago? Well, we tried to cover that in a very confusing way in the first couple of segments, but I'm not the expert in most of this. I try to come on and give you information as I see it and a little bit of opinion. The experts come to us by way of the account executives, the people that work in the trenches with the borrowers as well as the loan officers on a weekly basis. Maureen Reynosa from NewRez is one of these people, and she joins us now. Maureen, thank you very much for coming on the show. How are you?
You're very welcome. I'm doing just great.
Okay, excellent. And I appreciate that, believe me, because I deal with a lot of different people in the industry that come on and they talk about what's going on. But someone who's been in the industry as long as you, we've been through these sort of times before. What are you telling your loan officers and borrowers about where we are currently in the cycle of mortgage interest rates?
Well, I basically tell them this too shall pass.
That's very good advice.
You know, it's really hard. We never know where the rates are going to be from one day to the next. Back when I got into this industry, a very wise person told me, follow gas prices. And that worked really, really well for a very long time, but not anymore. We're in a very different market now. And, you know, I'd seen the rates improve and then decline and then improve and decline. And I saw something today that said this is what it's going to be. It's going to be an ebb and a flow for the next several months. And I feel that that truly is what it is going to be. And I think the consumers are finally getting used to the fact that this is the market we're in. The days of the 2.75, 3%, 4%, 5% rates are gone, and they're not coming back anytime soon. But I think we're also setting ourselves up for a fantastic refi boom as we get towards the end of this year, beginning of 2025.
Yeah, I agree with you there. So in this ebb and flow, this up and down, and I agree with that analysis, by the way. I think that's exactly what's happening. Do you tell people to have your hand on the button? Like, as soon as it gets to where you can do it, you got to be ready to go? Or are you, you know, how is that affecting, you know, the people who are out there trying to buy a house and they're waiting for a certain interest rate so they can afford the payment? They have to be, like, as I said, really ready to go.
They do. They do. And, you know, when I get a lot of to be determined, people that are like, okay, what can I qualify for so I can start going out and looking for that? And I tell them, you know, please, because the market is so unstable, don't let that dollar amount drive you, because typically you tell a realtor, okay, I qualify for this much. Your debt ratio is probably at the maximum. 44, 45.
Right.
And then when you actually get in front of the underwriter and the income is calculated properly, or maybe there was some undisclosed debt, and all of a sudden now you're at a 50 or a 51 and it doesn't work anymore. So I encourage real estate agents and loan officers, when they're pre-qualifying their borrowers, to not go crazy and don't stretch that envelope all the way to the end, because inevitably I get pulled in.
Right.
And it's, how do you fix this, Maureen? What do we do? And then I've got to roll up my sleeves, put my underwriter brain in to figure out how we're going to make this one work.
Yeah, that you say that, obviously people are listening going, yeah, well, that's your job. Well, no, not necessarily. What it is being friendly to the people who can help you is always the best way to go. So being prepared as a borrower, being prepared as a real estate agent to get the documentation correct prior to submission is always the best way to go, because when you do need a favor from your account executive, that's when you want to call it in. You don't want to have them building the bridge from day one. You want to have them come in and do the finishing paint job at the end.
Exactly. Exactly. Although I do tend to jump into my loans, because I was an underwriter before becoming an account executive. So it's second nature for me to say, oh, yeah, I know what we can do. This is what we're going to do to make this work.
Well, that's even better. In making it work, tell us what's going on with NewRez programs you're offering this spring in this market.
You know what we're seeing a lot of right now is non-QM.
Okay.
We've got my Smart Edge program, which is what I call my just missed jumbo or your just missed agency. So you're not getting an AUS approval. And so that's a full doc product. We have a high asset qualifier in there. We have I-10 borrower in there. And my second one is my Smart Self, which is our bank statement product or 1099 product. That one is terrific for self-employed borrowers, especially the self-employed borrowers that are writing off as much as they can because they can.
Right.
But then when it comes time to buying a home, they're not going to be able to buy as much. So we review their personal or business bank statements. We do it before the loan comes in so we know how much money that what we have to qualify them with.
Now, let me ask you a little bit about that deposit, because some people have asked me this question, and I'll ask you. I work in a business, this is a hypothetical, but I work in a business and I get paid periodically. And when I get paid periodically, there's a huge chunk of cash that I can put in my account. But that doesn't come in on a monthly basis. How do you calculate that?
So this is why we have a 12 or 24 month average. So take, for example, attorneys. These attorneys are perfect for this. Same with real estate agents.
Right.
Same with mortgage brokers. Sometimes
actors, there's a lot of people out here that have that same income stream.
We take into account what industry you're in.
Right.
And we take into account that, you know, I think I had an attorney, and he had three large deposits over the course of 24 months, and they were massive.
Right.
But it worked. We just pushed it out over the time period they're looking for, whether it's a 12-month or a 24-month. Typically, if you have somebody that doesn't have deposits consistently, monthly or quarterly, if it's less than that, they're probably going to want to see a 24-month stretch. That's
right.
Not to say that we wouldn't take a 12-month. Every loan that we look at, especially in our non-QM Smart Series, they're all different, and they're all underwritten to their own merit.
Does it matter in terms of the rate you get if it's 24 or 12, or does it matter at all?
You know, there's a difference of an eighth of a percent between the 12 or the 24 month. The 12 month obviously has less rotation, so sometimes it's worth it to say, hey, I'm going to take a little an eighth in rate. How much really is that in payment, depending upon your loan amount? It could be a very small amount versus the headache of scanning all of those bank statements, because we need every page.
Right.
Even the page that says this page.
I hate that. Where is page 27? What do you mean? It's a blank page. Why? And you get into that whole, why do you need this? This is such a pain. And again, go back to the preparation. Knowing what you need and getting it prior to is always the best way to go.
Exactly. The third loan that we have in our non-QM series is Smart Vest. And now this is also known as a DSCR, a
debt service
coverage ratio. I have to think about that I've only been doing those for about 4 years because Caliber and NewRez merged, and in the merger we got to do the we gained the non-QM product.
Right, right.
So that is where the subject property qualifies for itself, and we get no other income. We don't want to hear about their jobs. We don't want to see their tax returns. If they have other rental properties, we just get the rental agreement. And within that product, I offer foreign nationals. We can also do condo tells and short-term rentals. So condo tells are, for those who may not know, are like a condominium project. You'll see a lot of these in Florida. You'll see them in Hawaii. But they also have like a concierge desk, a valet service. So it's kind of like a hotel.
Great
example that I can say locally, because I live in Costa Mesa, is the Balboa Bay Club down on Pacific Coast Highway. People can go in there and they can buy a unit, or you can come in and use it as a hotel.
Oh, that's excellent. Listen, we've run out of time, if you can believe it. That's a quick 10 minutes, and I really appreciate you coming.
Wow, that is a quick 10 minutes.
I know. Hey, listen, can you shout out or let people know how they might be able to get in touch with you, a terrific account executive, somebody who can explain some of these programs?
Absolutely. You can reach out to me from my cell phone, area code 949-836-9006. Or you can email me at Maureen, M-A-U-R-E-E-N dot Reynosa, R-E-Y-N-O-S, as in Sam, A, at newrez, N-E-W-R-E-Z, .com.
Thanks, Maureen. Thanks for coming on. I've appreciated it. I didn't even mention it was your first time on the show, but that was awesome. Appreciate it.
Well, thank you very much. I really do appreciate it. It's been an honor to speak with you and your fans.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Okay, that's Maureen Reynosa from NewRez. I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry.
You're listening to The Mortgage Voice with Jeff Barton. We'll be right back with more in just a moment. For questions or comments, send emails to info@malibufunding.net. Now, back to The Mortgage Voice with your host, Jeff Barton.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. Thanks very much for tuning into the show, listening to us on a weekly basis as we bring to you mortgage information. Mortgage rates going up, they're coming down. They're going up, they're coming down. Real estate prices, they're going up, and they still keep going up. And the availability of them keeps shrinking. I saw some, I don't know where it was, but you know, there's like 5,000 less houses on the market this year nationally than there were last year. Now, the number's pretty big, about 495,000, but at the same time, it's really not that much if you spread that out among the thousands and thousands of cities and towns and places all across the country that sell mortgages. In your town, how many different houses are available for sale, and how are you going to get into them? And that's sort of the subject of what we're going to try to do today, to talk to another great person in the mortgage industry who comes to us from LoanWise, Seth Soloway. And he joins us now to talk a little bit about mortgages, programs, what's going on at LoanWise. Seth, how are you?
I'm great, Jeff. How are you doing this afternoon?
I'm okay. I actually, you know what? I got out of doing mortgage origination, which I appreciate, but at the same time, my income went down. So I don't know whether it's a good or bad thing. You tell me. Are you there?
I lost you for a second. You don't know if it's good or not or bad?
Whether my income goes up or down. Yeah, I didn't know whether it was bad. My peace of mind is up, but my income's down. So.
Yes, I'm sure you sleep better at night these days.
I do, as a matter of fact. Thank you. Even through all the rain. And that brings me to a question. The rain. Now, there's been a lot of it. You have houses that are obviously in the area of where it has rained a lot here in California. How do you treat those property after rain like this? Do you go out and reinspect? What do you do?
If it's a really heavy, heavy rainfall or things like an earthquake, natural disaster type thing, like we just had an earthquake today.
Yep, we did.
We will go out and look, if it's really a significant one, we will go out and see if the house is in a flood zone, if it's in a burn area, things like that. Maybe it's a red flag area where if it's a severe type of catastrophe, we will inspect the house before, make sure it's standing, make sure it's in good, you know, it's a good investment at this point. Because a lot of investors like us are collateral driven.
Okay.
When we're not bank, so to speak, bank type lenders.
Right. You don't have deposits. You're looking at the collateral of the house as being your main asset to buy and sell in the marketplace. Yeah, I get that. And you're on the hook, like the mortgage broker or the mortgage lender, whoever it is, if the loan goes bad, then you're on the hook if, you know, something happens like to the property, right? Still.
Exactly. And so that's why we take an extra step to really look at the collateral, especially if we're doing something in, you know, that's an exception or something that needs to, you know, have us kind of take another look at or take another angle at how we lend on this property. Because given the fact that we are kind of a niche lender, we really have to look at how people qualify, how people's income is derived, because we're not really using tax returns per se.
Okay,
great jumbo products.
Let's talk about that. Well, niche products. Tell me what they are and you know, how you're doing with them.
Sure. We specialize in self-employed borrowers.
Okay.
Really kind of the gig and the LA or, you know, Southern California economy really bodes well for our client base.
Right.
But really, and even nationwide. I mean, obviously everyone has a side hustle, something like that. So really, it's things that those are the type of income streams that don't flow to the tax returns oftentimes. So what we do is we look at alternative forms of documentation. We take bank statements. We'll take, if someone is asset rich, we'll just do an asset utilization and derive an income based off of their assets.
Okay, how does that work? That one intrigues me, just because I know a lot of people, especially older people who have worked and now retired, have a lot of assets, whether it's in the stock market, whether it's in real estate, whether it's just, you know, gold bars at their local depository. Tell us how that asset program works.
Absolutely, especially with the run-up in, you know, the stock market.
Right.
What we do is we'll take a, you know, we'll take a six-month look at their asset, their portfolio, essentially, in a certain account. And then let's say it's $1 million, we'll just deplete it over a certain amount of months, 60 months. I'm sorry, yeah, 60 months is typically how much we deplete it over. So it's essentially a 5-year. Now, there is going to be a haircut on that type of asset. So, for instance, if it's a stock portfolio and it was $1 million, we would take a 30% reduction, and then you get $700,000. Divide that by 60 months, that's your income.
I see. Okay, it's pretty straightforward then. It's anybody, even I could do that.
It is, and it's a great program for, right, like you said, retirees who are, yeah, have a nice portfolio that, like my father, that's what he does. He invests in all day long, and that's how he drives his income. So it's a perfect tool for him.
Okay, so in this particular market, a program like that is great for these type of borrowers. Give us another example of maybe a group of people that may not be aware of the type of product that you're thinking, whether it's the group of people who come here that aren't necessarily citizens. I know you probably have I-10 programs, or the bank statement programs, which you talked about, 24 and 12. Is that right?
Correct. Okay. Yeah, our bank statements really shine. We also have P&L programs, too.
So, okay. I
mean, we're really, that whole market is evolving because there are so many people who are self-employed. So we will do 12-month look back, and we'll take just your deposits. Or we could go 24 months, and that's typically where you get a better
rate.
You get a better rate. So, what we do when we look at those, we'll look at the cash flow of the bank deposits, the statements,
right,
just to see that this is consistent with the type of employment we're looking at, and then we'll apply an expense factor. Typically, it's 50%, so you get 50% of your deposits. If you could substantiate that, maybe you're a sole prop or you have a lower expense factor. By a CPA letter,
right,
we can then shrink it down and give you a larger percentage of your deposits.
The CPA letter that you talked about, tell me a little bit about that. I know back in the day when things were awful, back in 08 and 09, that particular CPA letter explanation to things was really looked down, and they kind of did away with that in the subprime era.
Yeah.
Now it's making a comeback. What's the difference, and how's it working with you?
It's really making a comeback with the CPA. The CPA relationship is really making a comeback with the P&Ls, like I talked about before. But in this case, it used to be, the CPAs kind of pushed back and said, we don't want to, do these letters. Now it's gotten, and I don't blame them, to be honest.
Right.
Gotten to a point where now we're asking them to just, it doesn't necessarily have to be the person who prepared the returns, but it does have to be someone who is a CPA, an enrolled agent, there are certain other designations that qualify, but they just have to basically say, hey, I've reviewed these returns, and this is my opinion of their expense factor. So it's kind of call it a compromise between what the CPAs have said they would be willing to do,
right,
and kind of where the market has gone.
Okay, and the investors are secure with that, or happy with the fact that, this is the compromise that came about? Because obviously, it's exciting, because somebody who can generate that and have obviously the CPA or the accounting behind it, and I know there are a lot of businesses like that, really opens up a different type of market. As long as your investors are happy with it, I guess it's good to go.
And it is. And I will say, though, that is something that differentiates. And Mike, I can't speak for all companies,
right,
but that is definitely our interpretation, how we've been marketing the product and getting our loans originated. And then when you kind of add to that the P&L product, where it's really, that's come on strong, and that's really something,
right,
where the market's evolved. Essentially, if that CPA or, again, tax preparer provides us with a P&L, we're not even asking for bank statements to support that P&L. As long as it's a certified tax preparer who can verify their license.
Right.
So that's really kind of, an evolution of, that's kind of come out of the bank statements, alternative documentation. There's written VOEs. It's such a broadly expanding market.
Yeah, pool of borrowers, absolutely. Are you taking the full amount of whatever the tax preparer or the accountant is saying, or are you discounting that somehow? Like you said, a haircut earlier.
Yeah, that we are not discounting it. So
okay.
if the CPA puts that on P&L, that's what we're taking.
Wow, that's an excellent program.
Huh. Yeah, it's a fantastic program. Now, if the CPA is not licensed or license expired, and that does come up, then you have to support it with 2 months bank statements the most recent 2 months bank statements, just to show that your income, your deposits are still in line with what the CPA is saying. But that's only if it's, an unlicensed or someone who's, who we can't validate.
Excellent. Hey, listen, we've run out of it. Wow, that was a quick 10 minutes. My gosh, I looked up and I got 20 seconds left. All right. Could you shout out a way by which people can get in touch with you in case they have questions on these great products?
Yes, my number. Can I give my number out?
Absolutely. That's what I'm asking for.
Sure. Perfect. That's Seth Soloway, 323-251-6339. My email is seth.soloway, and last name is S-O-L-O-W-A-Y. At LoanWise, LoanWise.com.
Excellent. Seth, appreciate it very much. I want to have you back. This is pretty good information and great programs, by the way.
Thank you, Jeff. I really appreciate your time, and I look forward to working with you.
Excellent. That's great. Thank you. That's Seth Soloway from LoanWise. I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to The Mortgage Voice with Jeff Barton. We'll be right back with more in just a moment. For more information on today's topic, email Jeff Barton at info@MalibuFunding.net. Now, back to The Mortgage Voice with your host, Jeff Barton.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. Thanks very much for tuning into the show, listening to us each and every week. We bring to you news that you can use, whether it's about the rates that keep confounding everybody in the business, but it is the way it is. Or it's about, where are their properties? There's none over here. There used to be some over there. That's right. It's a very tough market in terms of finding properties to purchase, but it is still an opportunity market for those that can find those properties or take money out of their current property and invest somehow. Anyway, to join us again, once again, our resident expert in all of this stuff is Charles Giscombe from United Security Financial. He joins us now. Charles, how are you?
Jeff, I'm great. Thanks for having me.
Okay. We're talking a lot today about the market itself and the difficulty it is to try to pinpoint exactly when to either lock in a rate, because rates go up and down pretty quickly. I mean, if you're in the market and you're trying to figure out if you can afford a house, you can afford it 6.5, but you can't afford it 7. So if, it goes from 6.5 to 7 in 2 weeks, how are you going to solve that problem if you need to lock right away, but you can't lock because you haven't got your loan submitted yet? How do you deal with that?
Well, at the end of the day, Jeff, it's just about us looking at the market, seeing the trends, find out where to do it. A lot of times, because the market goes up and down, I like to float rate.
Okay.
I like to float because I know from day to day as it changes. Sometimes you take a risk doing that, but in this case, like Jeff said, the market fluctuates so much that a float rate might be a great idea for you. So you get to a point where you need to get to, and then you can lock the loan. Obviously, if you have it submitted and you're ready to go, you need to lock as soon as possible. So you might wait a day or so and see what the market does. Because like Jeff said, it does fluctuate that fast. I usually use that strategy to find out where we're going to be, because there are no low interest rates out there.
Right.
So honestly, we can see a little bit between it. If it goes from 7.5 down to 6, down to 6.99 or back, you can float in and out of that to find out what's best. Sometimes you just have to lock in and get it and keep it there. Because by law, we can go down, we just can't go up. And so at the end of the day, that's the way I view it, that's our strategy, and that's how I tell clients when it's time for us to lock rates. Now, obviously, back in the day when the rates were lower, a lot lower, maybe a year and a half ago, I mean, you just lock it in because you're good all day. And so that's where we are, and that's the philosophy that I like to use or talk to my clients about. I usually use float rate locks.
Okay, so quarterbacking each and every deal is what the loan officer does. Certainly, understanding the structure, understanding the submissions, know who you're dealing with. But the quarterbacking of that particular loan, whether it's a multi-million dollar loan or whether it's just a couple hundred thousand dollar condo loan, is what you do. Tell us a little bit about the interplay between the agents and the funders and the underwriter and you and your client. How does that all work together to let you sleep at night, I guess, is the main issue here, but in order to close the deal on time?
Sleep? What are you talking about, Jeff?
Well, you know what I mean. Marginally no. Sleep, right.
Exactly. I get the best I can. My melatonin is my friend. Usually what happens with me in these situations, that it happens to be my strong point and one of my better skill sets, and that is speaking to everyone individually, not speaking to them in a manner that makes them feel like they're less than or don't understand or they're not intelligent, but speaking to them in layman's terms in a way they can understand. And that is everybody. It starts at the buyer level. It works to the buyer's agent. You're getting phone calls from the seller agent. You're having to communicate with the account executives at the particular banks if you're brokering, and also even with the underwriters, because in our relationships, in certain situations that we've been in for a long time, we can communicate with the underwriter. It helps us get things a lot easier. And then you go to the seller side, which is the seller agent and the sellers. All those people have the ability to communicate, right? Now, there's a certain protocol and process that you have to go through in order for that communication to occur. But this is what I always tell everybody included in the transaction, especially the buyer, the seller, the buyer's agent, and the seller's agent. If your loan officer is proficient and he's transparent and he understands loans, all he is a messenger from the underwriter and the processing team. So whenever you get a condition, you simply have to give that to the individual who is going to provide that condition, which is the buyer, obviously the title company, or the real estate agent. If you give that to them, it's their job to respond to you in a timely manner. And so that's why I make the loan process very easy. I always tell them, just because you turn in a condition doesn't mean it's satisfied or fulfilled. It means that it's sent over to the underwriter to review. If it's wrong, your time clock doesn't start. It actually doesn't start until the condition is accepted. If you explain that to individuals and let them know throughout the process, when you turn something in, it still has to be reviewed, and your time clock doesn't start on that particular condition or moving the loan forward until it's accepted by the underwriter and cleared. If we all maintain that level of communication, the loan process can be easy. Now, sometimes you'll have to go over it two or three times because the underwriter is very specific on conditions. How I do that is I explain that to them and let them know. So we're all earning while we're learning. It's simply teaching them about loans while I'm actually providing a financial need for them. And that way, if they ever do this again, they'll understand why they're doing what they're doing and why they need to do it. It helps us along the road when we're going down the road to the next loan or the investment loan or down the road. But as far as communication is concerned, you never hide behind your phone. You always email back. You try to address everyone, but you also have to give yourself time to allow the process to happen. So you have to manage this very carefully without offending anyone or talking recklessly to anyone involved in the transaction. It's how you keep transactions together. It's how the buyer gains trust in you. It's how the agents get to communicate and correspond with one another. All of that's super important to get us to the end of the deal so that the underwriter and the bank, the lending, the processing team can get their job done to get them to the closing table. I know that was long and drawn out.
No, it's an excellent explanation because most people don't know. I mean, they just – what happens is if one person in this – you know, there's a lot of people in this group, right? There's a buyer's agent, a seller's agent, a buyer, a seller, an underwriter, a funder. You know, you got an escrow person. You got
escrow,
six or seven.
Title, insurance, right. Correct.
You got
correct.
All these people involved. If one person falters – in either the delivery of the information or the documentation, or becomes somebody that's difficult to work with, it really slows the process down. And it doesn't fall on any one shoulder to bear that responsibility, but ultimately it always falls on the loan officer because they're the one with getting the money. And that's the issue with trying to, you know, deal with, and as I began this out, trying to get to sleep at night, while a lot of this has nothing to do with you.
Indeed. But you know what? Because I'm so invested, I take it personally. I'm very competitive basketball player, Jeff. You
yeah,
know that.
That's right.
And
yeah,
so I want to compete. I don't want to leave any task undone. I want the win. The money is a byproduct of the actual work and the win. That's what I tell everybody. Yeah, I'm always going to get paid because that's how it's set up. But if I do my job, the money's a byproduct of what I'm doing. My job is to communicate to all parties. I also like to think that I'm a master structurer. I know when a person needs to go in a traditional loan to have the capability. I know when someone should move to a non-QM loan. I know when someone should move to a stated loan. Our job is to recognize which bucket that individual needs to go in, and then that from that point, solve all the problems that that person may have with that particular loan ahead of time to make the road to closing easy. But it's super important to communicate properly with everybody involved in order for us to achieve the goal and the objective, and that's to get to the closing table and get those keys in the buyer's hands.
No, well said, and I agree 100% with what you're saying, because having the experience is really what it is. Experience, confidence, and also the humility to know, hey, you're part of this thing, but you're the important part. And that important part gives you not only the right, but is the responsibility for you to be able to take that group and work with them best you can. Nobody's going to say thank you at the end. They're just going to go on about their way. But that's kind of the best way of saying thank you, is that nobody either complains or says anything. And so I think that's where we are.
That's awesome. You know what? In the most polite and kindest way, I always say respectfully, I need you to know this. He who has the gold makes the rules, and we have to abide by them, because everybody who is giving out money has conditions on that money. If we understand that basic principle and know that we have to provide what they're asking for, this will make the process a lot easier for all of us.
Yeah. Well said. Hey, listen, we're up against it. I'm sorry. Ran out of time, but that was great, and I really appreciate you. You got to bottle that, send it out to your clients. That was good.
Hey, listen, I will do so. Thank you for having me always, Jeff. I really appreciate being here as always.
Let people know how they can get in touch with you, Charles. That'd be great.
Absolutely. You can reach me at that good old Las Vegas, 702-328-5191. That's 702-328-5191. Or you can reach me at C. Giscombe at USFWholesale.net. That's C. Giscombe at USFWholesale.net.
Charles, thank you very much. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me again, Jeff.
All You're right. welcome. That's Charles Giscombe from USF. I'm Jeff Barton, your voice in the mortgage industry. We'll see you next time.
You're listening to The Mortgage Voice with Jeff Barton. For more on today's topic, visit www.malibufunding.net.